طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر.
Welcome to the July 27th edition of This Week in Palestine, a weekly show hosted for many years by our beloved Sharif Fahm and continued in his memory by a group of his dedicated friends. Every week, This Week in Palestine brings you news and views from a distinctly Palestinian perspective, a perspective seldom heard in the United States. On today's show, we feature an interview with the Electronic Intifada's correspondent in Gaza, Rami Almaghari, courtesy of the MPROG Army Radio Hour. The interview was recorded last week on July 20, hours before Rami and his family had to evacuate their home. As the death toll exceeds 1,000 in the Gaza Strip, it is important not to be blinded by the propaganda in our media and listen to Palestinian voices on the ground describe Israel's brutal attack on civilians. Stay tuned for another thought-provoking segment of This Week in Palestine. But before we get to that, I actually want to include in here something from... Actually, I found this on the Daily Kos. This is by Klemenstra. And it's talking about how author Naomi Wolf was challenged to read the Bible. And the results, in her words, blew her mind. Here we go. Okay, so I was challenged. Read the Bible. God gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people. So I may get crucified for this, but I have started to say it most recently to warm welcome in a synagogue in L.A. Actually, if you read Genesis, Exodus, and Deuteronomy in Hebrew, as I do, you see that God did not, quote-unquote, give Israel to the Jews and Israelites. We as Jews are raised with the creed that, quote, God gave us the land of Israel, unquote, in Genesis, and that ethnically we are the chosen people. But actually, and I could not believe my eyes when I saw this, I checked my reading with major scholars and they confirmed it. Actually, God's covenant in Genesis, Exodus, and Deuteronomy with the Jewish people is not about an ethnicity and not about a contract. It's about a way of behaving. Again and again in the covenant language, he never says, quote, I will give you, ethnic Israelites, the land of Israel, end quote. Rather, he says something far more radical, far more subversive, far more godlike, in my view. He says, if you visit those imprisoned, act mercifully to the widow and the orphan. Welcome the stranger in your midst. Tend to the sick. Do justice and love mercy, and perform various other tasks. Then you will be my people, and this land will be your land. So, my people is not ethnic. It's transactional. We are God's people, not by birth, but by a way of behaving that is ethical, kind, and just. And we stop being God's people when we are not ethical, kind, and just. And anyone who is ethical, kind, and just is, according to God in Genesis, God's people. And the contract to give us Israel is conditional. We can live in God's land if we are God's people in this way, just merciful, compassionate, and it never says it is only your land. Even when passages spell out geographical boundaries as if God does such a thing, it never says this is exclusively your land. It never says, I will give this land just to you. Remember, these were homeless nomads who had left slavery in Egypt and were wandering around in the desert. At most, these passages say, settle here. But they do not say, settle here exclusively. indeed. And again, it talks about welcoming Zarim, translated as strangers, but can also be translated as people or tribes who are not you, in your midst. It blew my mind. I hope it blows yours too. And now, an interview with Rami Amagari.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
I am very fine under this situation. Who is talking, please?
So this is Fanon, and we were the ones who were talking by email.
Yes, by email. Actually, yes, yes. This is the time for our phone call today.
Yes, yes.
Hi, Rami. My name is Sam Knight. Thank you so much for joining us. Are you able to talk right now?
I think I am able to talk. The situation is getting very desperate and very, very tension right now in the region.
Yes.
The Israeli army attacks are escalating right now on the different parts of Gaza.
Yeah, we saw a tweet from Ali Abu Nima saying that you received a warning from the IDF saying that your neighborhood was going to be attacked.
Yes, of course, that's it. I am now leaving my house. I have left my house with my family. I live in the middle area of the Gaza Strip in the Magad refugee camp that has received warnings by the Israeli army. The Israeli army has warned the residents of the Maghazi camp and the refugee camp of El Bridge, that is very close to us, to leave their houses right away, outright. And they warned us in the recorded messages by phone that we would face the same destiny, the same fate of the Shaja'iyya neighborhood's residents.
Would you mind going into what happened in Shaja'iyya last night, so any of our listeners...
Yes, of course. I'm going to tell you what happened. The Israeli shells or the Israeli tank shells, landed in different houses of the neighborhood of Shaja'iyya and different streets of the Shaja'iyya neighborhood. And so far, the number of casualties is standing at 60 or more than 60 people killed. Most of them, majority of them, are women and children inside their homes, and more than 200 have been injured so far because of this intensive Israeli shelling on densely populated areas of the Gaza Strip, particularly in the Shaja'iyya eastern part of Gaza City.
And just
what's
to reiterate,
the situation with electricity and water now there?
The electricity is cutting off for prolonged hours for the time being. It's about 16 hours or 18 hours a day. Only 3 hours we enjoy the electricity for 3 hours. And there is a sort of a shortage in the supply of water because water is depending on the electricity. Unless you have electricity, you can't pump water into the houses, which are roofed and stories. So it is really very desperate for the time being, and the people are living a very harsh situation, the most difficult, the critical moments ever for the past 8 years during the Israeli attacks on Gaza. 3 of them were major, including the 2008, the 2006, and the 2012.
Mm-hmm. And just to reiterate, I've read reports that the shelling on Shaja'iyya was indiscriminate. Would you describe that as accurate?
I can't describe that accurately because I don't live in a Shaja'iyya neighborhood, but I have been following up on the news for the past hours, and all the news reports suggest that the Israeli shelling on the Shaja'iyya was very indiscriminate. That's why the casualties among the population, the civilians, has been very high for the past hours.
And now the most moral army in the world is threatening to do that where you are and forcing everyone where you are to evacuate.
Yes, they have forced us to evacuate. Yesterday, for example, I was in Maghazi. Today, I'm not in Maghazi. I left Maghazi and for the safety and the security of my children and my family, which I find no security and no safety for the people of Gaza for the time being. Yesterday, for example, I told you that many people, many, many families, or hundreds of families from the eastern parts of Maghazi fled to schools, to UNRWA-run schools, in the Maghazi camp itself, and many of them have been sheltered over there. I managed to talk to some of them. It was really a very intense situation. Some of them told me that it was the first time for them to leave their houses, and the first time in about 8 years. Even in the Castle operation that Israel launched in 2008, they were not forced out of their homes. But this time, they have been forced out of their homes because of the intensive Israeli shelling. Some of them told me, actually, personally, that the fire was set into the houses of some of the dwellers of that neighborhood that is very close to the border with Israel, about 300 meters away and 500 meters, and some houses located at about 700 meters away from the Israel-Gaza border in the eastern part of the Gaza Strip.
Rami,
you know,
I have
anything about the journalist Khaled Hamad that was killed in Shijaya last night?
Repeat, sorry?
Do you know anything about the Gazan journalist that was killed last night? It was Khaled Hamad.
Yes, I heard that a journalist who was attempting to take photos along with an ambulance crew member were killed in the Shijaya neighborhood in one of the streets. It's reportedly, or as I said, that the Mansoura Street, that's what I'm really trying to remember for the time being. But he were trying to take photos of the situation over there, and along with an ambulance, a crew member were killed in the same indiscriminate Israeli fire on the said battle place. And unfortunately, I have just been following up on the news that Israeli leaders, including the Israeli Prime Minister and Israeli Defense Minister, are all warning against warning of more escalation and tough escalation and against the Gaza Strip in the upcoming hours. And it seems to me that the civilian casualties that are falling down for the moment are getting less important for those who are concerned about attacking Gaza. This is really a sort of an unprecedented situation that actually requires a sort of a very genuine international intervention by all parties concerned in peace and security or stability in this part of the world. That is the situation for the moment.
Rami, I have one question, then I'll let my colleagues ask more, which is the Israelis claim that this operation is about closing the tunnels between Gaza and Egypt. From what you have observed, how did the facts on the ground weigh against that claim?
I have not been talking on analyzing things. I am a journalist. I always take the views of the people and send them out to the outside world, but I can say that this is a sort of a one more Israeli pretext that's adding to the many Israeli pretexts over the past years to attack the Gaza Strip. As far as the tunnels on the Gaza-Egypt border line, these tunnels have been largely destroyed by the Egyptians since the ousting of an Egyptian president, Islamist president, Mohamed Morsi, about 1 year ago. And the situation is very difficult on the border between Gaza and Egypt. The Egyptians are closing the border already, destroying the tunnels themselves. So this is not the tunnels. You mean that Israeli claim that there are tunnels on the border with Israel. This is something that Israel has claimed before, and also was reportedly uncovering some of these tunnels. But this is also a pretext, because whatever a pretext Israel brings to attack the Gaza Strip, always the Palestinian civilians in Gaza are paying very high price for the Israeli attacks on the region. I can remember with you many Israeli attacks, major attacks, including the 2006 in which Israel had the British stop freeing an Israeli soldier, captured an Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit, who was 5 years later was swapped with Palestinian prisoners or detainees. During that time in 2006, Israel killed about more than 500 Palestinians, including many, almost half of them were civilians, and destroyed many points of infrastructure by then. Then the Israeli army came in 2008, to stop the rocket fire from Gaza. That was the pretext, and many people, hundreds of people killed, 6,000 others injured, and this is a situation that is repeated. And the Gaza Strip, always Israel resorts to violence, resorts to military options, while I think that there might be a chance for a sort of a peaceful option for this situation to end and for the peoples in this region, Israelis and Palestinians, to enjoy some sort of stability and security for years to come if there is a goodwill on the part of the all Palestinians, Israelis and Palestinians and everybody. That's what I can say.
How do people feel about continued resistance there? Because I saw some reports that people were like, for 7 years we've been slowly being killed, and now they're, you know, like fighting back.
Sorry, I can't hear your question.
How do people feel about like the resistance there? Because I saw that the people were saying that over the last 7 years they've been slowly being strangled, and now at least they're you know, fighting
just
back.
Just a second, please. Okay. Just a second, please.
Sure.
I can't hear your question. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. There are so many people are. This is in this place, and
yeah,
I'm sorry, I can't.
No problem. We were just asking if you feel that people are more in a mood for resistance this time. You know, the last few times they were just sort of getting slowly killed, and it seems like now people have more of an appetite for direct resistance of the Israeli army. Do you feel that you've sensed that?
Now the Israeli army is attacking Gaza very largely and very massively, and people who are being attacked by an army or an Israeli army, I think this is a sort of a very complicated situation that people who have been living through a very prolonged siege, Israeli siege for the past 8 years, with many economic hardships and no life, no genuine life for the people of Gaza. So I think I can't say that this is very similar to life in Gaza. Now this is very similar to life in Gaza. But as far as your question is concerned, whether the people are supportive or are continuing or something like that, this is something that can never be verified, because the people of Gaza are very civilian population, and their ability to stand harsh or excessive Israeli army force is very questionable. They are very civilian, and the infrastructure are very disparate. There is no real infrastructure in the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian civilians in Gaza are mainly civilians. They are not a state. Gaza is not a state. Gaza is a very narrow and small coastal region that is home for 1.8 million Palestinians and a very densely populated area in the world. So most of the people here are very civilians, and their ability to stand a sort of a fierce Israeli attack is quite questionable. So I do not think that the people are happy in receiving the rockets and receiving the Israeli shells and receiving the Israeli strikes by every time and then frequently by day and night. That's what I can feel about the situation, about the people with whom I live in this part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Rami, I have a quick question. The Israelis have been claiming that Hamas is to blame for everything that's been going on. The Palestinians that you've been talking to, are they blaming Hamas? I mean, that sounds on its face absurd.
Yeah.
I can tell you something. This is a sort of a very repeated question, very repeated story for many years, for decades now. I can remember with you in the 1970s, Israeli forces, Israeli army, it cracked down massively on the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which is an organ of the Palestine Liberation Organization, which later on recognized Israel's right to exist, okay? So in the 1970s, they cracked down massively on the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and then the ability of this group, Palestinian group, was grossly damaged. Until the 2019-82, when the Palestinian Liberation Organization's factions in Lebanon fired rockets into Israel from the north of Israel, okay, the Israeli army decided to launch or to carry out a massive attack on Lebanon, just cracking down on the Palestine Liberation Organization. And Israelis besieged other Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon for about 88 days until Israel managed to force the Palestinian Liberation Organization out of Lebanon to Tunisia. And later on, the Intifada broke out, the Stone Intifada, the Stone Uprising of the Palestinians in 1978. In 1987, it started. Then Israel resorted, for the first time ever in its history, resorted to peace. returned to peace accords with the Palestinians, and the PLO Liberation Organization, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, organized Israel's, recognized Israel's right to exist. And every time the situation is getting very tense because of the lack of the will for peace on the parts of the people concerned with the peace process, for about 20 years now, the Palestinians have not realized something that was already acknowledged by the Oslo Accords of 1993. So it's a very, very repeated pretext by Israel. Every time Israel has a new enemy, let me say between brackets, a new enemy. In the past, it was the PFLP, and later on, it was PLO, Palestine Liberation Organization, and it is Hamas. This is a sort of an unending situation that can be simply ended, can come to an end by international will, by legitimacy, by international resolutions, which are already pending, by the peace process that was signed between Israel and the Palestinians in 1993.
It's just another tactic then. There are no Palestinians on the ground who blame Hamas for the conflict.
I tell you something. The Palestinian civilians in Gaza are very civilians. The infrastructure is very disparate, and it is lacking, actually. So the Palestinian people in Gaza, which is very narrow and very small coastal territory, is very questionable, Palestinian people's ability or civilians' ability to stand these massive and fierce and excessive attacks by Israel is very questionable. So it is really very questionable. So I no one can predict what is going next. No one can predict what is next to come. No one can predict whether the people will stand this or not stand this. This is something that is really very questionable under Israel's massive and fierce attacks against the Palestinian populations of Gaza.
So I actually want to go back to your situation really quickly, Rami. When you got that call from the IDF telling you to evacuate, did they tell you where to go, or did they, or, you know, where it would be safe to go, or did they just say leave your home?
They asked all the people by the recorded messages to go to a town that is on the coast edge. It's called Deir al-Balah. It's a refugee camp in the Gaza. It's near to Maghazi and the bridge, about 5-6 kilometers away from the region Maghazi. They asked all the population to go to Deir al-Balah. But I can tell you that there is nothing, there is no safety in the Gaza Strip now. No place is safe in the Gaza Strip for the moment.
Well, and not only so that, I mean, they're expecting you to basically walk with, you know, elderly, kids, sick, injured, 5 or 6 kilometers from your home with all of your belongings. That seems impossible, even if that place was safe.
Yes, it is impossible. Yes, it's a very, 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 very something that is unimaginable, cannot be imagined, to ask thousands of families, thousands of households to leave to another area, which is very small area. So it is really unimaginable to take your belongings and to go over there. This is really a very, very, very hard situation, a very hard moment for all the Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip.
And if you didn't leave, you would then be accused of being used as a human shield by Hamas. If you decided that it was impossible to leave your home, you would then be branded as a human shield. So you really have no options.
This is, you know, I told you, Gaza is a very small, you don't have shelters underground. You don't have basic infrastructure. The borders are closed in front of you. Everything is locked down in front of you. This is the house that you have lived for many years. This is your area, which is very small and a few kilometers, 6 kilometers you live. This is really very desperate situation for the people of Gaza. So I told you in one of my things to you that this is similar to life now. This equals life in Gaza for the moment. So how come people who have been living in their houses and they are living in a very narrow and very narrow place, very small place, how come they abandon this? So at the end of the day, you describe them as a human shield. This is really unimaginable and unbelievable for the people of Gaza.
Unbelievable. About how the situation, how the hospitals are dealing with all the casualties. I mean, I was seeing reports after Shujaya that there was like bodies stacked in the. They had no place to put anything.
The situation of hospital is very, very, very critical for the moment, as the officials on the health ministry or health officials have warned of the shortage and the lack of basic and essential medical supplies and medicines, also the equipment on the part of the hospital functioning. That is very the situation. That's what have been announced. That's what has been announced by the health officials in Gaza, that the situation is getting very desperate for them, and they are lacking so many things, many needed things, in order to cope with the mounting numbers of killed or injured in different parts of Gaza. That is the situation for the hospitals.
Lindsay, you had a question.
Hi, Rami. Yes? I'm Lindsay. I was reading your article about the boycott down by Israeli fire on Gaza Beach, and I noticed at the end that the father said that he was going to call on Erdogan to help bring justice for his slain son. Are the people of Gaza looking to Turkey to bring justice for this?
Yes, please. I repeat, I can't hear your question very clearly.
Okay, sorry. I was reading your article about the boycott down by Israeli fire on Gaza Beach yesterday, and yeah. I noticed that at the end it said that the father was calling on Erdogan to help bring justice for his slain son. Are the people of Gaza looking to Turkey to help absolve everything that Israel is doing?
Yeah, the people of Gaza are now looking forward to everybody who is concerned with stability and peace in this part of the world to intensify their efforts for having this situation ending. But as far as the father that you read from my article, this father was speaking, referring to the spot where his boy was killed. That spot, there was a sort of a memorial. It is there, over there, there is a memorial for the Turkish victims who were killed during the flotilla incident in 2010 when Israeli Navy unleashed fire on the flotilla supporters, solidarity campaigners, including 10 Turkish people on board who were killed by Israel. There is a memorial, and he just was referring, that's what I understood while he was speaking, was referring to that memorial, which is built by Turkey, which is commemorating the Turkish victims, and he called on Erdogan, who has been fighting for bringing justice to the victims of his citizens, to the victims of his country. The way he brought justice was been fighting to bring justice to them. He asks them to bring the same way to bring justice for his slain or killed a child on that same spot. That's what I understood from the speaker, the father of the child.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Sam, you were saying something?
I was going to ask Rami what you think, what our listeners, what Palestinians want our listeners and people in the United States and all over the world to do for them right now.
I think what is needed from the part of the word of justice, the word of humanity, is to look forward to improving the situation of the Palestinians, trying to alleviate the suffering of the Palestinians and the amounting suffering of the Palestinians for this moment particularly, and for many years now, actually, because there needs to be a very strong international will on the part of the international community to alleviate the suffering of the Palestinians, to help them realize and observe justice on parts of their lands, on their own occupied lands, in the Gaza Strip, for example, in the West Bank, and occupied East Jerusalem, which are recognized by the international community as occupied Palestinian territories that should be restored to the Palestinians by means of international will, international justice, international legitimacy. For the moment, critically, and for the moment, urgently, the international community should work immediately on stopping the atrocities that are taking place now in Gaza, in the name of a stopping rocket, or the name of mainly shutting down the tunnel. This is situation that should come to an end, as the civilians are paying very high price for the moment, and their lives have been devastated for the past 8 years, by means of an Israeli blockade that has been that has remained in place for 8 years now, and the people's movement is very limited, except for patients coming in and out of Gaza from time to time, who are constituting a very little number of the whole population. That's what I can say.
So I realize this is probably more of a long-term solution, but what are your thoughts on the BDS movement? As a Palestinian, are you supportive of that effort around the world?
I can't say this is what I'm saying about the international community is well towards ending the situation, towards resolving the conflict in this part of the world. All these actions that the BDS and other actions are meant to bring justice, are meant to pay the attention to the Palestinian people's suffering in this part of the world, because this is a sort of an action that is similar to the solidarity campaigners for many years who are supporting the Palestinian cause, and these actions are somehow helpful for the Palestinians worldwide. And all these actions, including the BDS and the solidarity campaigning for many years now, are only meant to bring some kind of justice to the Palestinians. And unless the time justice is brought to the Palestinian people, and the Palestinian people can live on their own Palestinian homeland alongside with Israel in peace and security and coexistence, no need for any action, whether solidarity or any other action. But I told you that I am always emphasizing on the legitimacy, on the international legitimacy that recognizes the Palestinian people's right to this part of the world, side by side with Israel in peace and coexistence. That's what I can say.
A few days ago, you interviewed a woman named Umm Yazid, and I apologize if my Arabic pronunciation is terrible, but Umm Yazid said, quote, "I do not think these Israelis are the same ones who lived side by side in peace with Palestinians prior to 1948 in historic Palestine." Do you think this growing sentiment of this mindset of violent hatred in Israel is really, like, would you feel safe living side by side with...
What I can say is that the amount of the Israeli actions, the amount of the Israeli violence that is taking place for example, the past 10 years, Israel has stepped up attacks very intensively on the Palestinians, killing them massively on the streets of the Gaza Strip. What this woman was particularly referring to is back to the prior to the 1948, where many Palestinians living in the homelands and in historical Palestinian towns lived in peace and harmony and coexistence with their Israeli neighbors who used to live with them prior to the 1948. And you know that prior to the 1948, there was nothing called sort of armed Israeli militias. The Israeli armed militias began in that period, in that year, in 1948, and later on, a few years before the 1948, and before that time, for many years, for many decades, Palestinians lived with Jews. Palestinians, Muslims and Jews lived together in the same neighborhoods of Palestine, and to the extent that they had one unified currency, one united currency, which has three languages, English, Arabic, and Hebrew, and the Palestinian pound. There was a Palestinian pound prior to the 1948, and which has the Hebrew words on it, Palestinian pound in Arabic, in English, and in Hebrew. That was the life prior to the 1948, where people lived in harmony. But later on, when Israeli came and established its state on the homelands, on the towns, on Palestinian towns of before the 1948, the amount of violence and the amount of excessiveness or fierceness has increased and reached the paramount these times in the past 10 years, and reaching more paramount just for the moment as the Palestinian civilians in Gaza are being killed massively inside their homes.
Can you talk about how I know your neighborhood or the area of Gaza you live in is a refugee camp, and much of the population of Gaza is refugees. So the people that are being forced to leave their homes again, it's like, I mean, they've already been displaced once.
I do think that this is already an overpopulated population, refugee population, small population, refugee populations in Gaza. And I already told you that this Gaza is very small and a very limited area. It's a very nice, tiny, narrow, tiny coastal territory. It's very densely populated Palestinian area. And the borders are closed. Where these people should go? If Israel asks them to leave, where these people should go? Tell me. Can you tell me the question? Can you answer me this question? Can you put your shoes on, put yourself on my shoes?
Yeah.
Well, I asked the world to put them. I put their shoes on my shoes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, usually a refugee would cross a border, but there are no borders that Palestinians are allowed to cross.
Yes, no borders for Palestinians to cross. The Egyptians are closing the borders very tightly. We have the northern border with Israel in the north of Gaza, and we have the sea. Where to go? The sea is in front of us, and the border is back to us. Where should we go?
Well, and you're not even allowed out into the bay. I mean, there's a blockade on the bay as well.
You tried to fit.
Even the beach, even the Sea of Gaza is full of Israeli gunboats. So where we go? Tell me where we go.
I think if the Israelis actually cared about the Palestinians living in Gaza, they would let the 1.4 million refugees return to their homes in Israel, but they currently cannot because they're the wrong religion. Does that not seem correct?
I didn't get your point.
Let me repeat. I think that if Israel cared about, you know, the Palestinians in Gaza and did not want to let them live under Hamas, they would allow the refugees to return to their homes in Israel.
Yeah, but that's not.
Yes, this is a very long-standing issue of the Palestinian question, of the Palestinian cause, the issue of the refugees. These refugees who are being forced to live in Gaza for decades now have already have towns and villages back in Palestine, back in historical Palestine, before it was the present Israel now.
Mm-hmm. At
this moment, I am really wondering as to where we should go. That is the wonder now. We as Palestinian refugees living in densely populated refugee camps, where should we go? We have the borders closed from Egypt, borders closed from Israel. We have the sea on the west. We have the Israeli borders on the east. Where should we go?
The article from the deputy speaker of the Knesset saying talking about his plan to basically remove all the Palestinians from Gaza and settle it with Israelis and just open the borders and send them into Sinai?
I think we are in the 2014. We are in the 21st century. It is time for a civilization. It is time for civilizations for all peoples in the world. This is time for a civilized life. This is time for a peace and coexistence between all peoples in the world. This is sort of repeating or getting the wheel of history back to the time of crushing peoples, people crushing peoples out, people driving people out. This was a part of the history, and this is unbelievable. This cannot be believed to be repeated and to be done in this time. So there is very clear situation for the Palestinians and Israelis. There are many legitimate resolutions, many UN resolutions, peace accords between Israel and the Palestinians. According to all these elements, the Palestinian question and the Palestinian people's question of peoples, the Palestinian people's conditions can be sorted out or resolved according or on basis of all these elements that are very pending for decades now.
Rami, I would like to ask you very briefly what people think that you've talked to, what you and people who you talk to think about the rocket attacks into Israel.
I tell you, this is really a very a very difficult question to answer. As I told you already, the people are very civilians here, and they have been living in a very separate life. They had no life for the past 10 years, almost the past 10 years. So they are very civilians and very central people. And their ability to stand all these things, either from Hamas or from Israel, their ability to stand this is very questionable. And you cannot predict what is next. So you cannot say that the people have been born and raised on something that is called resistance of the occupation, because of the existence of an occupation, because of the continuity of their suffering, of their refugee problem for many decades now. But the resistance has taken many shapes over the past history, of the past few decades. Now the resistance is taking another shape. And now there is a very tense situation for all the Palestinian people in this part of the world who are not being held by the international community very properly. They are not held properly by the international community. And the resistance is taking many shapes, and this is the shape of the resistance now. And I told you, the people's ability to stand all these amounting pressure and attacks on them is very questionable, and no one can predict what's next.
Yeah, so for a minute, I actually want to go back to your interview with that elderly couple, Abu al-Walid Muhammad Aid and his wife, because I felt that interview really sort of summed up the whole, the feelings of Palestinians, and I want you to let me know if I'm correct in that assumption. But basically, they discuss how, you know, they are happy to live side by side with Israelis, but that they need to return to their land. Like, they, you know, and they refuse to accept any, money for it, which is one of the big pushes in a lot of these peace deals, is to, you know, compensate people for their land. And this couple says they will not accept any compensation, and that they use very, sort of, I'm trying to find the quote, but he basically talks about, that returning over his dead body, or, basically saying that he would stop at nothing to return, sort of the violent language that people from Israel point to and say, oh, they're willing to die for this, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, all they want is to return to their homes, and once they return to their homes, they'll go back to farming and peace with their Israeli neighbors, and that this expulsion from their homelands that's unacceptable. Would you comment on that?
That is quite similar to the woman that you have just referred to, the woman in the last story who said that these Israelis are quite different from the Israelis prior to the 1948. That is the situation for these elderly Palestinians who had witnessed the Nakba, or what is called the catastrophe and the displacement of Palestinians in 1948. They looked back to history, while they found that they could live in peace and harmony with Israeli neighbors, and they want to return back to their homes, and they cannot accept a compensation. And this goes with the international communities, or the international UN resolution, General Assembly 194, which calls for the return of Palestinians and the compensation for the trauma and the suffering they had endured because of this expulsion by the Israelis of them to the refugee camps. That is the resolution, compensation and return. The right of return ensures or guarantees the right of return for these refugees to their own hometowns. This is a very given fact about these people, or elderly people, that they want to go back, and they can never accept a compromise or a compensation financially for one single moment they lived happily and nicely back in their hometowns in Palestine, which is now present Israel.
Mm-hmm. Rami, I wanted to ask you, there was in the article you wrote a couple of days ago, you had talked about how you were in a cab, a taxi cab, and a missile hit right next to it. Like, most people in the U.S. have never been through anything like that. Or, I mean, how do you deal with that? Like living under something like that. Just seeing things that are that close to you.
And if you could describe that event too, as well.
I don't know what to say. I am destined to live in this part of the world. I'm destined, like you are destined to live in the States or any part of the world. We are destined to live with this. This lives with us. Life lives with this. That's the life of the Palestinian. For me, as a father and a responsible father, a father for four children, I had the responsibility in my children to go to feed my children, to do my work, to do my responsibility. This is a responsibility of my children as a journalist, as a writer. I wanted to do my homework, even if it was very dangerous. Okay, I already know it is dangerous to go, but I just had a deeper breath and traveled some other towns in order to find a story, to do a story about what's going, to report about the situation that is outbreaking in Gaza. I didn't know that I was about to see a drone hitting something or something near me or something else, a motorcycle or something else. I just had the breath, a deep breath, and went right away to do my work as usual. This is a responsibility. That is my destiny, to be living in this part of the world. And I should be coping with it as much as I can, according to within my own capacity. Now I am stuck at my home. I have been stuck at my home. I didn't go even for during the 3-hour break, the 3-hour ceasefire, which I could do my story, my last two stories. Okay, so this is really a very separate situation that is I am destined to have for the time being as a Palestinian, as you are destined to be a United States citizen or some others.
Did you know did you know who the two men on the motorcycle were?
I didn't know the names, but when I just came back home, I read on the TV, on the radio stations, that two men on motorcycles were killed on the Salah al-Din main road, okay, south of Gaza City. The same incident. About a few minutes later, I learned about the death of these two people.
Yeah, in that article, you make a really amazing point where you talk about how, you know, the Israelis were able to conduct this precision strike on a moving motorcycle, you know, which requires just unbelievable levels of precision. And yet at the same time, you're seeing these massive, massive civilian casualties, you know, children and women dying. And it's difficult to reconcile the incredible precision that Israel obviously has to target a moving motorcycle with no collateral damage around, and yet also their ability to shell neighborhoods, killing, you know, huge numbers of civilians.
This is a point that I raised in one of my interviews back in 2012 when I was faced with a question by a reporter or by a presenter in one of the stations in the U.S. Yes, they asked me that Israel always claims that the people are just looking as if they were human shields for the Palestinian fighters who fired rockets into Israel. I told them that Israel, when they kill civilians, when there are civilian casualties, Israeli claims that there is a possibility for the killing of civilians because they are living in a neighborhood that is close to rocket fire or something like that. I told them that Israel has a sophisticated technology that can do pinpoint attacks, that can target pinpoint attacks without having a harm. Israel can harm a motorcycle, can harm a person in the street without having a collective damage around it. That's the question. So Israel can do pinpoint attacks, while in the meantime, it is harming many civilians around. Mm-hmm. That is really questionable. Good point.
It makes it seem that the harming of civilians is actually their goal at times. Because there's no
collectively punished.
Yeah.
Collectively punished.
I can't hear you. This is a shit.
We were just saying that it seems like the goal is the collective punishment.
Sorry. Are you done with your questions? Because I am really done and I'm consumed.
Oh, okay.
Right now I'm consumed.
That's fine.
I talk to you under very immense pressure.
No,
very immense pressure.
We want to thank you so much. We understand that this is an incredibly trying time for you, evacuating with your family, and we know that you must have immense things to deal with. So please, thank you for joining us, and hopefully we can have you on again to discuss this further.
Yes, I will be pleased. I will be pleased to have you again.
Best of luck to you. May your family be protected. May you
thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, that's just about all the time we have for This Week in Palestine, except for this that I just found. This is news from Friday night, but it's from the Daily Star, Lebanon. It's entitled, Hamas Not Complicit in Teens Kidnap. Israeli Police. Beirut, the Israeli Police Foreign Press Spokesman, Mickey Rosenfeld, appears to have falsified the Israeli government's claim that Hamas was responsible for the killing of three Israeli settler teens in June by saying responsibility lies with a loan cell that operated without the complicity of Hamas's leadership. The kidnapping and subsequent killing of three Israeli settler teens last month is considered to be a flashpoint for the escalated violence in Gaza that, as of day 19 of the conflict, had left 926 Palestinians, mostly civilians, dead. At the time, Israeli authorities placed the blame squarely on Hamas, with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying, quote, they were kidnapped and murdered in cold blood by animals in human form. Hamas is responsible and Hamas will pay, end quote. Friday, however, there appeared to be a break in the official line when BBC journalist John Donison tweeted a series of statements he attributed to the Israeli Police Foreign Press spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld. Israeli Police Mickey Rosenfeld tells me men who killed three Israeli teens definitely lone cell Hamas affiliated but not operating under leadership, and seems to contradict the line from Netanyahu government. Well, the journalist then goes on to tweet a further statement from Rosenfeld, which, given that Israeli authorities used Hamas culpability as a pretext for its crackdown of the West Bank that saw hundreds of Palestinians arrested and several killed, could cast serious doubts on the Israeli government's justifications. Ending quote here, Israeli police spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld also said if kidnapping had been ordered by Hamas leadership, they'd have known about it in advance. End quote. Well, this concludes another edition of This Week in Palestine, a weekly segment here on 90.3 FM Newton that is part of Truth and Justice Radio every Sunday from 6 to 10 a.m. We hope you'll join us again for news and views from and about Palestine.